Welcome to Edutopia Radio. This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. When Benjamin Barber started teaching high school history and government more than a decade ago, he didn't think he needed to teach his students how to take notes and study with them. But then he looked at the notes his kids were taking.
And it was a big moment for me as an educator because while some students had terrific notes, others, I called it the big list or the great list, where they had just listed facts from the lecture or from the book. And there was really no rhyme or reason. There might be a date with no information attached to it. And I realized the students can't use these notes.
What Benjamin saw with his students struggling to take notes is real. And there's actually good research to explain this.
So note-taking during lectures is hard. It's really hard. Students are often exposed to new material. There's unfamiliar vocabulary. The information is often really dense and conceptually complicated.
That's Stephen Merrill. He's Edutopia's editor-in-chief. Like me, he's a former teacher, and he also directs Edutopia's research coverage.
And then students have to determine in real time what's important and figure out a really efficient way to capture that information. So that's just a lot to coordinate. We know from the research that students capture only somewhere between 30 and 45% of the important information in a lecture on the first go. So the first draft of your notes is kind of fragmentary by nature.
Steve reviewed the research on note-taking and studying, and he says the takeaway is clear. It's the work that students do after taking notes that leads to deeper learning.
You can introduce students to the Cornell method, the outline method. You can model your own note-taking. I think that's really important. But I tend to spend more time emphasizing the revision and reorganization of your notes. That's the completion of your learning. And then students need to close their notebooks and test themselves. Can they recall the material from memory and grasp the implications? Those two processes, revising your notes and self-testing, are more important in the end than getting your notes correct in the first place.
Remember Benjamin Barber? Revising notes and self-testing are a big part of how he teaches his students to study. But there's so much more to his approach. In fact, Benjamin wrote an entire article for Edutopia to share how it works. Today, he'll tell us why he asks his students to take notes by hand and how he sees disordered notes as an opportunity. Plus, we'll take a close look at a brilliant strategy he developed to incentivize better note-taking and studying in his classroom. Okay, let's get into it. You have experience teaching high school and middle school, but I suspect actually that many of these strategies could be adapted for elementary school students as well.
I would agree.
Okay, so you have a three-step process for teaching your students how to take notes and then how to use them to study.
Yes, yes.
Write, read, use. That first step seems so obvious. Write the notes. But I'm curious to understand what you tell students about what to write down in their notes, because I know that is a real struggle for so many students.
Yes, the writing is critical. It's very much the cornerstone of the note-taking process. So in my class, I do mandate this, a paper notebook. So all their notes have to be handwritten. There's a couple reasons. First of all, I think they go slower, and I really want them to write on paper because I think writing by hand helps them to learn the material. And I talk to them about effective note-taking. And first of all, I say to have a heading. Label your notes. Put the chapter, put the lesson, put the date. And I will give the students a structure that I use. I don't demand necessarily that they use my structure, but I encourage the students to write with bullet points, a small amount of words in each bullet point, not necessarily full sentences.
Okay, this seems simple, but I know that there are still going to be students who are inclined to transcribe the lecture verbatim. How do you convince them not to do that?
Well, my lectures are very structured. I often have a PowerPoint, so I will put on a screen often what I want them to write, and then I might verbally add to that. So I'm very explicit. I actually say, start a fresh page and write this at the top. So in answer to your question, maybe I'm telling them, I'm kind of walking them through it at times. And for some people to hear that, it might sound sort of hand-holding, maybe too much so, but I think of it as part of the lesson.
You know, when I was teaching with the kids, I might say something like, and I had middle school students, so younger than yours, but I would say something like, blah, 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 I'm going to say that again.
Yes,
and you might want to write this down,
yes.
Right? And then we'll say it again. But the thing is, maybe that is too much hand-holding, or maybe it's also preparing kids to notice when things are underscored again and again, either verbally or in writing, because students should be looking for patterns of emphasis.
And there is a time and there is a place for students to make inferences on their own. But overall, I don't think class should be a mystery. We just have to tell them sometimes. This date is really important. This name is important. You need to know what this theory of government is. And I'm going to give you a definition, and it's on the board, and I'm going to ask you to write it down, and we're going to work with it, and you're going to be tested on it.
Okay, great. So that's the writing part of the note-taking. Now, let's move on to the second step of your note-taking strategy. This is when students reorganize, amend, and rewrite their notes. And you wrote something about this that caught my eye. You said, having disordered notes actually presents an opportunity. What did you mean by that?
So going back and organizing, reorganizing, working with, manipulating in some way, often is a learning avenue, an avenue for review. And so I see it as an opportunity. So when I talk to my students, I will often say before a quiz or before a test, let's look at our notes. I'm here, I'm in front of you. If something is not making sense, let's talk about it. Let's rewrite it. It'll not only help you on the assessment and the quiz, but you'll be relearning the material. And if it's disordered, if there's missing headings, this is an opportunity to organize it, to give it some cohesion. And that is such an important part of the learning experience.
Okay, and we heard the research on this at the start of the episode. Let's stay here in the second step of your note-taking strategy for a moment. What types of changes should students be aiming for during this phase?
Well, I often will tell them to make your notes more readable. We all write something down and we kind of scratch our head and think, what was that all about? Who is this person? Why is there just a date or a factoid floating on the line in this white page? At first, you think this is a glaring error. I left something out. And yes, one could look at it that way. But there's another way. Let's find out what this is. What is the importance of this date, this name, this factoid?
Right. So if there's a note saying Bunker Hill or a date, say July 4th, 1776, a student can look that up, find the relevant information, and fill in the gaps, both in their notes and in their understanding.
Yes, yes. So if anything is missing and you reread it and you don't understand it, that is where you have to focus on amending or changing them.
Okay, let's move on to the third step, which is use.
Yes, yes.
And by use, we mean students using their notes to review and practice with the material, maybe with flashcards or self-testing. Tell us how you help your students learn to study more effectively with their notes.
Yes, I have experienced over and over, students write the notes and they never look at them again until maybe the night before the test. You have to use them. So a big one I talk about is testing yourself. And there's lots of ways to do this. I encourage my students to make flashcards of dates, flashcards of names, flashcards of events from their notes. With the advent of AI, I have told students to type their notes up, upload it to AI, and ask it to make a quiz.
Okay, so that's really interesting. And I know self-testing is about identifying the important ideas and themes in your notes, then asking yourself questions about those ideas and answering them from memory, right?
Yes. Sometimes I'll just ask students to maybe highlight or to note what they definitely think will be on the test. Just look through last night's notes on section 4. If you had to pick 3 things that will definitely be on the test, underline it.
Basically, you're encouraging them to assess their own notes.
Assess their own notes, to continuously go back. And I think you have to do this. This might sound like a bit much, but I think you almost have to do it daily in some way. So I have a daily quiz. And the daily quiz is open note. It's 5-10 minutes at the beginning of class. So it's just this constant looking at one's notes.
Through a different lens.
It's through a different lens. Always through a different lens. I've asked them to draw a picture. Let's pick one section from last night's notes. Choose a concept in your notes and just sketch a little picture next to it. We're going to take 3 minutes. Sketch a little picture. You can color it if you want, but no words. So it's just getting their eyes on their notes over and over and over and using it to some effect, a quiz, a visual representation.
Okay, maybe, this is brilliant. I want to circle back to something that jumped out at me while you were talking. You mentioned AI, so I have to ask, what do you think are the pros and cons of students using AI to write a practice test versus having them just write those practice tests themselves without AI? Have you noticed a meaningful difference in your students' outcomes?
I think both can be done well. Students writing their own assessment from their notes is better in the sense that the student is going to really slowly have to go through all their notes and create something from scratch, which can be time-consuming. It can be difficult. It makes the students think about the notes and the lesson in a different way. The thing about AI that has its own benefits is a student can make more than one test very quickly. So they can say, write an essay test on my notes, write a multiple choice test on my notes, and they can just do this very quickly.
After the break, we'll talk about how Benjamin gets his students to use these study strategies. Be right back. Hi, friends. We are working on an episode about handwriting, and we want to hear from you. With so much emphasis on digital tools in classrooms these days, why do you continue to teach or require handwriting in your class? Share your thoughts with us, and we may feature you on an upcoming episode. There are two ways to do it. One, call our hotline and leave us a voicemail. Our number is 866-333-4930. I'll say it again, 866-333-4930. Or you can record a voice memo on your phone and email it to us. Our address is podcasts@edutopia.org. Okay, let's get back to the show. Now, Benjamin, I know you created a really effective way of incentivizing your students.
Yes.
To actually use these active review strategies when they study. I'm talking about what you call your test average method. And basically, you're testing students twice, once without their notes, and then right away a second time with notes. And then you average the two scores.
Yes.
Tell us more about this.
I really wanted the students to use their notes for a test. But I didn't want my summative test to be open notebook. I want them to really learn the material and to be able to recall the information without having to look always. But at the same time, I did want them to be able to use their notes and to study from their notes. So I decided, well, why not just cut the test down and give them the same test twice, back to back? The first attempt, they will do without their notes. And then immediately take the same test again with your notes, and I will average those scores. So they can't rely on their notes, because if they bomb that first attempt, even if they get 100 on the second attempt with their notes, they're not going to get the score they want. But they have a bit of a safety net. So they're encouraged to both study in the traditional way and to have organized, well-written, legible notes, because it has to be handwritten in a notebook. And I will say that at times I will have them take it a third time. If it's a particularly hard test, I'll say, now you can work with your friends and do it a third time, but only using your notes. And they'll be looking over each other's shoulders, looking at their notes, talking. Then I'll say, well, where did you fall short in your notes? How did your peers' notes work better? Or, you know, maybe they didn't.
Okay, Benjamin, here's the big question we know our listeners are thinking about. How do you, as the teacher, keep up with double the amount of grading?
Yes, so I am grateful that our learning management platform will take care of that for me. It will instantaneously grade their test, their first attempt, and their second attempt. Not the short answer, but all the multiple choice, fill in the blanks, questions like that. They have to answer the short answers or the essays on the first attempt. And if they feel comfortable, I will not ask them to rewrite. I'll say, you don't have to. I'll just take your first score. If on your second attempt, you feel that you could give a better answer with your notes in front of you, then you can rewrite it. So basically, the only thing I'm really scoring twice would be short answers, or in rare cases, essay, because I don't give an essay on every test. I'll usually give a short answer or two.
Okay, got it. Now, before we wrap up, I do want to share a concern voiced by several teachers in our Edutopia community.
Yes.
You require handwritten notes, but I'm curious how you accommodate students who may struggle with that due to dyslexia or dysgraphia.
Yes, I have encountered that a lot in my career. My first response would be to work very closely with the special ed teacher, whoever is working with that student. And I defer to the special ed teachers, and I say, how can this student proceed? I will do what you think is best. And then I'm just open. If the student can write some notes by hand and some on a computer, an iPad, because I'm not a teacher who says, these are my rules, everybody has to follow them. I will approach every student in a unique manner, whatever they need.
Mm. I want to close by asking what more you think schools should be doing to teach students note-taking and studying skills.
I'm not an expert on what every school is doing, but I think these are important skills. Note-taking, I really think, is something that has to be learned. It's a teachable skill. And I don't see my students taking notes as rigorously or as regularly as I would have at their age. And I don't think that's a fault of the students. I think that is because many educators, and I would include myself in this, for many years did not teach the importance of note-taking.
Here are the three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, writing and revising notes by hand are key to Benjamin's strategies. And that may seem anachronistic, but there's a decade of good research backing that up. In 2024, researchers at Georgia Southern University and the University of Nebraska analyzed 24 studies of typed versus handwritten notes. And they found that, quote, handwritten notes are more useful for studying and committing to memory than typed notes. Two, I was really struck by Benjamin's test average method. That's where he has students take assessments twice. Once without notes, and then again with their notes. And then he averages the two scores. This strategy might be one to try if you're looking for ways to incentivize both effective note-taking and studying. And three, the actual act of taking notes is not as important as revising, reorganizing, or manipulating your notes later, as Benjamin says. To really complete the study cycle, students need to close the notebook and test themselves on important concepts from memory. And teachers can help too. We know from research that simply slowing down when you lecture and building in pauses helps students improve their notes. Here's Stephen Merrill again to close us out.
Every 7 to 10 minutes, maybe pause for 2 to 3 minutes and let students complete unfinished thoughts in their notes. Maybe compare and discuss their notes with another student. Kids who paused during lectures to revise notes, in a 2016 study, they had more notes, higher quality notes, and much better retention than kids who revised after lectures or on their own. So stopping during lectures to revise notes, that's a really effective approach.
Special thanks to Benjamin Barber. He teaches at Fairview High School in Pennsylvania. Edutopia's video team made a very cool video about Benjamin's test average method. We'll link to that in the show notes, along with his article about all the strategies we discussed here and any research that we mentioned. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill, who you also heard earlier. Special thanks to Yuki Terada and Katie Barber, Benjamin's wife. She shared her home studio for the taping, and we are so grateful. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.